Hello and welcome to this week's Movie Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at xorsonx, and I am here with Brian, who you can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. No need to cheer, no one is looking. All right, this week, Brian picked Man of Steel because he's seen it a million times and he didn't feel like watching anything to give the audience something new. Plus, it's, you know, for the whole upcoming Batman Superman thing, so we figured we'd revisit this. Nailed it. I, on the other hand, have only seen it once or twice, so I was happy to watch it again yesterday before we did this podcast. Yes. All right, so directed by Zack Snyder, written by David Goyer, cast Henry Cavill, Michael Shannon, Russell Crowe, Kevin Costner, Lawrence Fishburne, Amy Adams, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so Clark Kent, one of the last of an extinguished race disguised as an unremarkable human, is forced to reveal his identity when Earth is invaded by an army of survivors who threaten to bring the planet to the brink of destruction. Dun, dun, dun.
It's actually not the greatest of synopses.
As did you pull that from IMDb?
Yeah. Leaves the transmitter! Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
But they're not trying to bring the planet to the brink of destruction. They're trying to remake it into new Krypton.
It's called terraforming.
Right, but they're trying to... They're not trying to destroy the planet. They're trying to rearrange the atmospherics to make it like home.
Atmospherics, nice.
Just saying, to call Zod a terrorist is very simplistic.
Actually, nowhere in there does it say anything about terrorists, George W.
I'm just saying, it's implied throughout the film, Zod is a terrorist from outer space. Not true.
I did not get that. He's just very intense about wanting nobody but his people to survive.
Yeah, exactly. I mean... I think he was short-sighted because somebody's got to work at Subway.
Huh?
Somebody's got to work at Kryptonian Subway.
No, they don't have Subway.
They would.
No.
You can't remake Krypton with eight people.
Why not?
Because...
No, they would just start up the baby machine again.
Oh, yeah. That's right, they did have...
With predetermined jobs before you're even born.
Yeah, and they'd have the Subway incubator.
Right.
All
right. It's like the perfect Christian thing with the whole predestination and all that weird stuff. And
I don't think Kryptonians are aware of Christianity.
They probably invented it. It was probably supposed to be Kryptianity.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it fell apart while I was saying it.
It fell apart while you were thinking about it.
I was going to say something about how humans just probably got confused on the speech, but, yeah, we'll just stop there. So... Yeah, like I said, I've only seen this a handful of times. Nowhere near as much as Brian, but, you know, if I'm going to watch a movie, to me it's just easier to go to Netflix or Prime than it is to get up and turn on the PlayStation and take out the game and grab the Blu-ray and put it in. And I mean, it just wasted my popcorn making time.
It actually takes less time to do that than it was for you to just go through that whole spiel.
It does, but I'll tell you... We're so not even on topic yet, but this really annoys me, and I hope that, like, big wigs are listening this week at, like, these corporations, because here's the thing. When I spend $25 on a 3D fucking Blu-ray, I don't need trailers before the movie. Just give me the movie that I paid for and stop it with the commercials. That's the whole reason that I'm spending the money, is because I don't want the commercials. Yet they still throw them on there.
A lot of times you can skip those.
Yes, I was able to, which is nice, but they do make them where you can't, and it's just super annoying.
That is, get the garden variety sour cream and onion potato chips ready time.
That was a terrible reference. Let's get into this movie.
All right.
So, like he said, this is a terrible, terrible synopsis. He's not disguised as a unremarkable human. I mean, he didn't really disguise himself. He just didn't present his powers throughout the movie, I guess. But for those of you who haven't seen it, it does give you, you know, the backstory But it doesn't do it in a long, drawn-out, here's three-quarters of the movie wasted kind of way. It pretty much gives you a nice little 15-minute intro on Krypton where they're, you know, their political powers are fighting with the military powers to decide the fate of the planet. And in doing so, that's when they send off little Kal-El to Earth with, oh, what's the term? Codex? Yes, the Codex, which is the basically blueprints for all Kryptonians everywhere, so that, you know, Kryptonians might have a possible future. So he goes to Earth, and then there's a little trial for Zod, and he ends up killing Superman's dad. And then there's little tears. And, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. And I don't think I've seen him before I started watching Boardwalk Empire. But Michael Shannon has got to be one of the most intense actors on the planet. And I don't think they could have picked a better Zod. Like, he...
His face can crumble brick.
He can melt brick.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, he just stare at a wall, and the wall just falls down, like, out of fear.
God, that guy is so intense, and it is... It really just... Not that this movie would have been bad without him, but my God. If you haven't seen it, you'll know what I'm talking about.
I agree. And if you watch the special features, you see the John Byrne Man of Steel run from the mid-80s was heavily inspirational to the whole Krypton segment. Although I kind of feel like Kevin Anderson's The Last Days of Krypton also informed the opening. Because if you've read that novel, it deals a lot with the environmental catastrophe Krypton's facing, and Zod and Jor-El kind of sparring with the political elites of Krypton, who just feel like, nah, it's fine, we'll just ignore it and it'll eventually sort itself out. But in the book, Jor-El actually has a brother who's also a scientist who lives in another city, who's really like at the brink of seeing the effects of how Krypton has just been mined of all its natural resources. And I get the book, it's really good.
It's funny to me that Kryptonians made it a lot farther scientific wise say than we are right now. And I don't want to make this sound like, well, because we can't fly. No, it has nothing to do, like, they left their planet to do the space exploration like we have, but we haven't sent people farther than the moon. Whereas here, it got to the point where they were building these terraforming machines, the world engines, as they call them, where they would go to these planets and they would set up bases across the galaxy. And then, after some time, the scientific program fell apart. They stopped doing it. They stopped funding and they stopped supplying those other planets. And that all kind of died off. And then they just mined every possible natural resource out of their planet until it basically imploded, which is kind of the path that Earth is on, except we haven't set up any bases across the galaxy, nor have we spent the kind of money I think we should be spending on space exploration. They've very, very much weakened NASA's budget over the last 15, 20 years. To the point where it's kind of almost useless.
Elon Musk, he'll save the world.
So I mean, it's cool that you're getting all these like private sector startups that want to explore space. I think that's kind of neat. You know, they're doing some pretty good things. Europeans have done some pretty neat things with their landing of the space probe on the meteor a few months ago. I watched it live. I'm a dork. It was awesome. But it's kind of neat how, again, here it is, just a stupid superhero movie. But there's kind of this overlap of like, hey, we don't start paying attention to like all this natural resources we're burning up and all this global warming shit. Like, this is a potential thing that might happen here.
Again, you watch the special features. Russell Crowe says that underlying theme is what made him decide to do the movie. Swish.
Well, we're here to review the movie, not the special features, so...
I'm just saying.
That's the third time
you mentioned it. The movie's got more layers than people want to give it credit for.
Oh, no, I don't disagree. I think a lot of movies do, but I think I shouldn't say that because there's some people out there who take this stuff a little too far. Not everything is made by the Illuminati, and that's that. There's no such thing.
Right. Only Green Lantern was made by the, what? Or was that the Transformers? I don't remember.
It was probably both. But, yeah, I remember, and again, this is slightly off topic, but I remember watching an interview with Henry Cavill when they first called him and told him, yeah, we want you. You're going to be Superman. He was basically, he missed the call because he was playing Warcraft. So he's a total nerd. He got the call back and he was like, sweet. And they're like, yeah, but you can't really tell anybody yet because we're going to make the announcement like on Monday or some shit. And he's like, well, can I tell my family at least? He's like, yeah, that's fine. Just, you know, tell them to kind of keep it to themselves. And then he called everybody in his family and nobody answered the phone. So he sat in his apartment by himself, all depressed because he was Superman and no one knew.
I don't know why he'd get depressed. I'd be like...
Because he was pumped, but he was trying to share his excitement with all of his friends and family, and nobody answered the phone. So he was just like, meh, like totally deflated. And I thought that was kind of funny because I feel like that would happen to me.
I think if that was me, I'd tell people, they'd be like, no, you're not.
Well, and that's the thing, too, and I'm not saying like that would be me because I want everyone to feel sorry for me. It would be me because when people call me, I never answer the phone, so I just expect that in return, you know. But back to the movie. So, you know, and it's got him very – it doesn't show a lot of his childhood. And they might flash back to it here and there through, you know, a life lesson that his dad, played by Kevin Costner, taught him for whatever reason. But, I mean, it basically starts out as him just, he's kind of a drifter. You know, he's going from job to job, just trying to figure out who he is, I guess, you know, where he fits into this whole planet. And every time somebody makes him angry enough to do something he probably shouldn't have done, he has to, you know, get up and skip town. So, you know, he's leaving a trail of stories behind, as well as, you know, he's becoming more and more, I guess you can say, Superman, trying to find. But, you know, not only is he just wandering around, but he's also trying to figure out where he came from. And so, you know, he's paying attention, obviously, to the news, which leads him to the, was it the, it was, I think it was actually a NASA satellite that they said pinged what, something underneath the ice in, was it Antarctica or
something like that, yeah.
So, you know, some expedition, and they're like, oh, well, you know, we don't know what it is. We got to dig down, blah, blah, blah. So he ends up on the team somehow. They don't really explain that, but he just happens to be there. And
I don't think he ended up on a team. I think he just heard about it, and he decided that he needed to go look at it and see what it was all about.
Well, yeah, but he was there, like, unloading the helicopter. You know, like, oh, be careful with those. Those are heavy, you know. Or maybe you don't remember that part. But
apparently I ignored that part.
But, you know, of course, he uses heat vision to go down there and melt the ice down, and, you know, he found out what it was, and it was. It was a ship that had crashed. I forget exactly how long they said it was down there, but, and that's where he first actually meets the consciousness of his father, I guess, is what you would call it. And that's how he learns the history of, you know, the planet and what happened and why he's there and why his parents abandoned him or didn't come with him and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, I mean, it jumps around a bit between his childhood and the drifter stage and, you know, a little more growing up. He watches, I don't want to say his father, but his adoptive father, you know, die in a tornado. And, you know, he doesn't help him because, you know, he doesn't want the crowd to see his powers. And I mean, yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know. You wanted to do it. Say something. I feel like I'm rambling here.
We're just giving away the movie now.
Well, not the whole thing. I'm just trying to explain that it jumps around a bit.
They just used past instances to make reference to various present circumstances. For example, see, now it's been a few weeks since I watched it, so I'm not exactly sure what scenes tie to what necessarily. But, like, for example, they explain how he is able to exist in our atmosphere by going back to him in grade school. And, you know, he can hear everything. He can see everything. He can sense everything all at once. And it's just overwhelming. And it's his Earth mother which teaches him to focus, because she tells him to, you know, to block out the clutter and focus on me. And that's how he learns to adapt to our atmosphere. They kind of try to illustrate the fact that, you know, he's of this other world and he's got these two parents that are his biological parents that are going to eventually inform who he becomes, but it's his Earth parents that informs who he is, and that's why he's, you know, got the, you know, yin and yang of being of Earth but also not of this world. We should just get off the whole synopsis. Most people have probably seen this movie. Let's get into the actual, you know, review part of the movie.
Okay, so what did you like about it?
All right. For me, it has kind of a personal tie, because when I was 4 or 5.
I'm going to say 4.
4 or 5, we'll say. Superman 2 had just hit theaters, and it was, to my knowledge, from as far back as I can recall, it was the first movie my parents ever took me to see in the theater. And I will not claim that I had every Superman comic in the world, or that I've seen, that I was the Superman expert at age 5. There were parts of that movie at that age that scared me to death, particularly Terrence Stamp's hairy-chested Zod was frightening to me. More even the guy who was with him, whose name escapes me at the top of my head right now, but the big gorilla-looking guy with the crazy eyes. Terrence Stamp, Zod, and that guy frightened me to death when I was like 4 or 5. I actually thought watching that movie that Superman was not only real, but flying was a possibility. When I attempted it once off of a fence and smacked my head on a pole, which was probably not the smartest thing I've ever done, but I thought, because I don't know if anyone remembers, back in the 80s, there was a thing called Superman peanut butter. And in the commercial, kids were eating the peanut butter, and then they were flying around with Superman. So my dumb ass goes, all I need is Superman peanut butter, and guess who's flying later today? This guy. So we go to the store. I see Superman peanut butter at Dominic's. I beg my mom to buy it. She did. We raced home. First thing I did was get it out of the bag, make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, ate it, jumped off a fence, smacked my head, story's over. Flying's not actually possible. But I'll always like have that memory of seeing that movie on the big screen as the first movie I ever saw. So right away, like anything Superman has always kind of at least like pinged my interest if I was aware of it. Like, for example, the Dean Cain show, I wasn't really aware of it, but I wasn't aware of much TV at that point in my life because I was too busy skateboarding and listening to Black Flag. But as far as what I liked about this particular movie, I liked the fact that it was more grounded, a little darker-ish. I know a lot of people hate the movie for that reason. I kind of prefer it because as much as I can appreciate any iteration of Superman, I feel like the time we live in right now, the time we've lived in the last 15 years, have not been super sunny and hopeful and yay, everything's great. And I like the fact that the Superman movie that we're seeing now is reflective of the horrifying world we live in. And it kind of gives you the wish fulfillment of what would it be like if in a time that is so uncertain, a person like Superman not only existed, but existed to forward the betterment of humanity. That's, to me, always been the takeaway of this movie, just as a blanket statement. This is not, you know, Reaganomic Superman. This is what Superman would be like if the world, if he came to Earth today.
Yes, I agree. No, I definitely am annoyed when people are like, this isn't exactly how it was when I was a child. Like, yeah, well, times are different and that stuff's not fun. So, yeah, I mean, obviously you can't make, you know, a quote unquote realistic Superman movie, but I mean, you got, you know, it has to be relatable to the times to be, to make, I guess, the statement that they were trying to make too, as far as the whole, you know, global warming and destroying the planet and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I mean, that and, I mean, Henry Cavill is probably like the perfect person you're going to find to play that role. Same thing with Michael Shannon.
I think John Hamm would have been a good Superman, but for mm-hmm. whatever reason, he didn't want it. I also think John Hamm would have been a good Bruce Wayne, but I actually now have seen enough of Ben Affleck to be pretty psyched, so I'm good with that.
Now that I'm like four seasons deep into Mad Men, I'm pretty sure John Hamm could do just about anything awesomely.
I'm not going to deny that or pretend that's not a true statement, because it pretty much is, because John Hamm could be Julia Child or Queen Elizabeth if he wanted.
I mean, he's dynamite in a dress. Same thing with Amy Adams. I mean, Lois Lane is kind of a, you know, a secondary character, and I don't want to offend anyone, but I mean, who cares really? But at the same time, I really like Amy Adams. I think I was a little surprised by the choice, I think. Because, you know, you think Lois Lane, you don't think of someone who's like in her 40s, but it doesn't matter, I guess. You know, I was just picturing someone younger, but she's still, you know.
The only difference is she's not a brunette, but I don't really care.
No, that doesn't bother me. You know, and it's, well, I don't want to go off on a tangent, so I'll keep that to myself for the moment. But, you know, and again, I'm not trying to be Captain I Know Everything About Superman, but I'm pretty sure that it's, hasn't it always been like Clark Kent worked at the Daily Planet and like no one knew he was Superman, but in this,
that's like the generic mythos, yeah.
But yeah.
I don't know.
Come on. No, but I mean, overall,
it's pretty much the worst alter ego ever.
Yeah.
And it's not like, oh, it's the worst alter ego ever in this movie. It's pretty much the worst, period. But at the same time, it kind of makes it the best because it's so bad, it's awesome.
Right.
But I was also going to say as well, the other thing that I really like about this version is Zod is the, you know, bad guy, so to speak. But he's actually kind of not the villain. He's of a different, he's almost, it's going to sound like a weird comparison, he's almost like Steve Rogers. He's a man out of time. He's a man. He's a fish out of water. You can't even say like, oh, he's got this extreme hatred towards Earthlings and Earth. He doesn't. He doesn't know anything. And his stoic personality is, I don't know these people. I don't need to know them. I don't want to know them. They have something that I need, and that's all he knows.
He's like Khan in the remake of Star Trek. He's not a bad guy. He's just trying to save his own people.
Right. He's not thinking like Earthlings are worthless and I need to murder all of them. He's thinking, you have something that I desperately need. You're in my way. No offense.
Like, I'm not going to lie. He's super intense and super scary. I probably would side with him as a human. I'd be like, you know what, dude? I agree. Let's do this. What do you need from me?
Yeah, he, and in his own odd sort of way, he has no malicious intent towards humanity. He sees no need for humanity. And the thing, if I recall, on Krypton, Kryptonians don't have flying powers and super strength. It's the atmospheres of Earth plus, you know, the Earth's yellow sun that gives them those abilities. On Krypton, if I'm not mistaken, they're like normal humans.
For the most part, yeah.
They walk around, they, you know, go to Starbucks.
Yeah. I mean, it's more of a warrior type situation where everyone's super fit and super, it's like a modern day Spartan. Well, I shouldn't say modern day, but it's like a planet of fucking Spartans.
Pretty much.
But, yeah,
and
overall.
And, like, super scientists. It's like if Sparta and Albert Einstein, like, created a place.
Yeah. Like, they can't, yeah, they can't, they don't have any quote-unquote powers. But, I mean, and that's the thing, I guess we can get to that, too, but I guess it really doesn't matter. But, like, if they have, like, I can understand the not being able to fly thing. and God, it sounds so weird just that that sentence just came out of my mouth. But at the same time, like, how all of a sudden do you have, like, the heat vision and the, like, cold breath and stuff like that?
You're asking me?
Is that is just because you're absorbed so much radiation from the sun and it's just changed your...
I believe so.
Your stuff? Yeah. All right, so we're going to move on to what we didn't like about it. And I'm going to go first because I don't want to forget. And, again, it's kind of nitpicky because whatever. But at the same time, it's kind of not. It's kind of, in my opinion... It's kind of a big deal, and just to slip it back to what I did like really quick, because I do want to mention it, because I know a lot of people don't like him, but and I love the Zack Snyder directed it, and I think he's awesome, and his visuals are amazing, and I don't care what anyone thinks. Nailed it.
Seconded.
I mean,
ditto, agreed.
People absolutely hate Sucker Punch. I will watch that movie right now and be like, yes, I totally get it. This movie rules. But anywho. Back to what I didn't like about Superman. The only thing that really bugged me that I can remember, I wish I would have wrote it down because I know I had more, but the main thing is at the end when Zod and Superman are fighting, it doesn't take Zod very long to adapt to his quote-unquote powers, to being able to control the voices. He very much like it completely affects him the moment they rip that mask off his face, and you know, Superman's all like, yeah, I've had a lifetime to, you know, train and develop my senses and learn how to block out what I don't want to listen to, and it's all hitting you at once, and it totally affects Zod 100%. 20 minutes later, when they're fighting again, he is super focused. He learned how to use the laser eyes. He's flying around. It's like, it took this guy 20-something years to, like, hone all that shit in. You've been here for a half hour.
Two words. World engine. To use the suspension of disbelief combined with the likely possibility, or not likely possibility, but likely probability, the world engine had terraformed enough of Earth at that point and the atmosphere of Earth enough to where he could at least semi-control the noise.
I don't buy it.
You don't have to buy it. I'm telling you, that's the probable explanation for why. That's my... And then it's the thing. They're not going to defer to the science expert in the movie and be like, well, Jim, explain how Zod all this... They don't have color commentators there to explain it away. You either have to explain that part in your... You have to fill that gap in yourself, wait for them to explain it in the Batman vs. Superman movie, or just accept the fact that you don't get an explanation.
Oh, I'm not expecting one. I'm just saying. That's really about it. I mean, I'm sure if I wrote some things down, there was something else too that kind of was not that I hated it, but I was like, that doesn't make sense. But I don't remember what it was, so it must not have been that big of a deal.
Yeah, the only thing. I mean, it's been a while since I've watched Superman 2, but I'm pretty sure there was a good amount of urban destruction at the hands of Zod, the Kryptonians, and Superman. And to burst the bubble of those that say, Superman doesn't kill, I can't remember if it's the theatrical version, and I want to say it's probably actually the Richard Donner version. But at the end of Superman 2, when they're in the Fortress of Solitude, I can't remember if he tricks them or if he shoves them or throws them or whatever. But Superman gets Zod and his minions to fall into the bottomless pit of doom and stands over it and laughs as they fall to their demise. So at least in this movie when he snaps Zod's neck, there's a reason for it. He's trying to prevent him from killing anyone. But also, he's never killed anyone before, and he has conflicting feelings about it. And I think that will be explained later on that that's the reason why he's taken on the mantra of no kill, i.e. like Batman, because Batman doesn't kill because his parents were murdered, so he hates guns. He thinks weapons are for the weak. Superman, I think, will go forward with a no-kill policy because he's killed someone and it didn't feel good. Whereas in Superman 2, not only did he sort of kill Zod, but he thought it was hilarious. So go watch the video. It's on YouTube. I'm just saying, everyone wants to say Superman doesn't kill. Well, apparently he actually does sometimes, once in a while.
No, he's... Batman and Superman have both killed people in the past, whether it be comics, whether it be movies. It doesn't matter. People who scream that kind of stuff do so because they know very little about comics. That's the way I look at it.
See, I think people...
It's just like the people who are bringing their kids to Deadpool, like, it's a superhero movie. It'll be fine. No, your kid's about to see some very, very grown-up stuff. Sorry.
No, I actually don't recall Batman ever killing anyone, but...
Do you want me to look it up really quick? Because I can't...
No, we don't have time. We're on the Man of Steel. If I have one thing... It's not even anything... I don't really have anything about this movie I don't like. I've watched it enough times where I'm still just completely confused as to why people don't like it. I mean... I'll say that the destruction at the end of the film when the buildings are falling all over the place was a little bit Transformers-y, but when you put it in the context of Kryptonians versus Earthlings and their super strength versus our regular strength, I mean, it makes sense that they would... if you read The Death of Superman, you know, him and Doomsday are pretty much destroying everything in sight, fighting just one another.
So. I mean, they do willy-nilly just knock down buildings, which is kind of like... Oh, like people put a lot of money and time into that, and you're just wrecking it.
Yeah, Donald Trump type people.
But
nobody cares.
At the same time, and this is another one of the things I really liked about it, is like almost every time Superman is, you know, Superman on screen, it's not like super professionally filmed. It's almost like somebody on the ground trying to keep up with the Man of Steel as he bursts into like sonic speed or whatever. It's, you know what I'm saying? It's just got that way of being filmed where it's like, it doesn't look like a movie. It looks like you're actually like watching it happen, which I, again, maybe I'm wrong, but that's the way I took it, and I can appreciate that because I think Zack Snyder is good.
I agree. I can get on board with people saying his writing abilities aren't great. They're not. They're pretty average to terrible. But when he's paired with someone who is more of a linguist, he's got the visual chops to bring a story to life in a way. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's kind of weird. Like, he's damned if he does, and he's damned if he does, he's damned if he doesn't. If he did visuals like every other director, you would not be able to tell the difference between his films and somebody else. His films would look just like the guy who made this movie or Failure to Launch or any random standard action movie. But his visuals stand out, so some people will think, myself included, wow, that's a really interesting visual choice. I like the way he's kind of done this with the color scheme, blah, 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 blah. His action set pieces, they are recognizable because they're uniquely his. And other people will go, that looks stupid. Why are his movies like that? Why does everything look like animated? Why does one, I mean, it's, I don't know.
Again, not to keep going back to what I liked, but towards the end when they're fighting in that small town and it's Superman and then that woman and that like gigantic robot. I don't know their names, sorry. But like they're beating up Superman and he gets up and tries to fly away, and as he flies away that robot grabs him by the leg and just smacks him. Like, it's just like so fast how things are happening. It's just, I don't know. That whole end of that movie with fighting scenes is just so good.
And it's, people loved it in Avengers. They saw it in this movie and were like, it looks like a cartoon.
I didn't think so.
I think it's just a matter of some people get bogged down in the whole Marvel versus DC, and to them, I am a DC guy. I'm a Marvel guy. And I'm like, I like all of it.
Yeah, so why can't you just enjoy everything?
Yeah, I like, you know, it was the same stuff in high school. I like that band. Well, I like that band. Well, I like both bands. Well, you're
stupid.
Yeah. Childish rivalries.
I agree. So, if you were going to make this movie, what would you have done differently?
I would have included the Bottle City of Kandor. just to have it, because it's never been in a Superman film that I'm aware of, other than an animated film. And I like the entire genesis, the story, and kind of the sad circumstances of that particular element of the Superman world. It's the last surviving piece of Krypton that's not him, and it's all these people in this entire city trapped in a little like fishbowl, pretty much.
Neat. There's only one thing that really honestly bugged me about this movie, and that was at the end, after everything had transpired, and he takes down that drone because they're trying to figure out where he, you know, goes to be alone or whatever, and then they get out of the Jeep to question Superman. He's like, you just got to trust me that I'm on your side. You know, I grew up in Kansas, for crying out loud. And then he flies away, and then he looks at the girl, and he said something, and she's like, oh, but he's just so hot. I'm like, oh, God, why? That is the only line in the whole movie that shouldn't have been there. Like, that just made no... Stupid. That line would be gone.
I think if I was going to do anything differently, I would have had him go to work at the Daily Planet prior to Zod showing up. That would have made more sense in a chronological manner. I think him going to work at the Daily Planet after he's destroyed and arguably saved Metropolis, it makes no sense. Like, you saw him on TV, you saw him on YouTube. The military has seen him flying 5 feet above them.
Well, the military know who he is. They know he's Clark Kent.
I just feel like it's common knowledge now. Like, you've seen... The world has seen what Superman looks like, and all of a sudden this guy walks in and looks just like him. He's like, hey, I'm starting my first day at work. It's like, what? That's probably the only thing I'm like, chronologically, that makes no sense. I don't know why they did it that way. I'm sure there's a reason. I couldn't find it to save my life, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that didn't really bug me too much.
It doesn't bug me. It just seems stupid when you think about it, because... In any other story, he leaves Metropolis, or he leaves Smallville to go to the big city to get his first big job and be an adult and live away from home. And
I don't know if I just didn't notice it the first time around, but I was actually like, when they were fighting in the one little small town and they had the water tower that said Smallville on it, I'm like, oh, that's a neat little tie-in.
Well, that's the name of the city.
Oh, I know, but it didn't dawn on me. I don't know if I just missed it before, if I wasn't paying attention, or if
the one little detail that I liked has nothing to do with Superman necessarily, is the fact that during that one sort of dream sequence, he's wearing a Kansas City Royals t-shirt. I was like, nice.
You're a dork.
Well, it ties it into the whole Kansas thing. It's nice to see a not New York Yankees or Boston Red Sox team get a little movie love. That's all.
All right. So, a lot of people were critical of Man of Steel. What's one thing about the film that you can either agree with the critics on or understand why some people are not on board?
I think when Clark gets bullied throughout his entire school career, that flies in the face of all the stories from the comics, from the show Smallville, where he's like, you know, on the football team and he's got friends and he's like maybe not the most popular guy in the school, but he's definitely not the school nerd.
Yeah.
And in this movie, he's like this downtrodden, oh, he's almost like a Marilyn Manson, like picked on, you know, emo kid in his personality, where he's constantly getting bullied. And people are like, come on, Kent, you want some? You want some? And it's like, what?
Well, that's what leaves the door open for, Kevin Costner to teach him life lessons.
Right, but it feels like the one time where he's getting bullied and all these guys are like, come on, Kent, get up. Get up. And he's grabbed onto the fence post, and then the kid who used to bully him helps him up, and then they do a close-up shot and the fence post has been crushed by his hand. I feel like that took place after he lifted a school bus out of the river. Like, if you were on a bus, or if you live in a town like Smallville, there was probably like 800 people total, and some 12-year-old picks up the bus and lifts it out of the water, I think that would get around. Why would you pick on that guy now? You know, when he, if he could pick up a bus, he could punch a hole through your chest.
That's bullshit. That never happened.
I'm just saying, again, a chronologically odd choice, probably not the best.
Yeah, it is kind of strange.
I'm just saying, like, I was never...
But, I mean, I get it because, like I said, that's what gives Kevin Costner the opening to teach him a bunch of life lessons, you know, about being the bigger man and not showing off who you are because, you know, blah, blah, blah. Government will take you and experiment on you and all that good stuff.
No, that makes sense. I'm just saying, if I lived in a town like Smallville, where there's probably two schools, one's elementary, one's high school. yeah, out of all a 500 of us, this guy picks up a school bus out of the river and lifted it up over his head. I don't think I'd try and punch that kid. I think I'd try to be friends with him.
I agree.
Or at least avoid him. And here's the thing. Those two scenes could be spiritually in chronological order, but they were edited out of order, which I'm like, what? I mean, the whole, like, I'm hearing everything. That's whatever. That's not a power. That's like an annoyance. But if you could pick up a bus, you're gonna do some damage if somebody tries to steal your lunch and, you know, yank their arm off.
The one thing that didn't make sense to me about that whole, like, where you're saying where he grabbed the fence or whatever and they're all picking on him, like, his dad's 20 feet away. Like, they didn't realize that.
Also, the reason why I'm 99% sure that those bullies came after the school bus incident is because the redheaded kid was picking on him on the bus
right
before he picked it up and then helped him up because he's like, I know. How did these other guys not know?
Maybe they weren't on the bus.
Yeah, but there were like 40 other kids on the bus. Somebody had to have said something. Hey, Clark Kent dove in the water and picked the bus up.
And what's the first thing that the toughest kid in school is going to do? He's going to go up to that kid and challenge him and be like, oh, show me what you got, pussy.
I don't know.
Because he wasn't there. He didn't believe it. So now he's got to feel like he's got to provoke it to see it or else he's not going to believe it himself. Dude, kids are stupid. That's how they work.
This is true. Kids are dumb. Kids are super.
I believe the children are right. What?
I just can't help but think that was a bad decision, one that was overlooked. I think when they went back and watched it, like, oh, the bus, not the bus.
Well, I really don't want to, like, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the loudest complaint I heard the entire time that anyone brings this movie up is Superman doesn't kill people. And yeah, I don't agree with people who are dorking out about it, and I don't understand. Like, I can't get on board with, like, at least saying I understand either. Like, no. Like, I really got nothing for this one. Because outside of Superman killing, I really don't know any other quote-unquote controversies or whatever.
Oh, there's the whole, the movie's bleak, it's... The colors are all washed out, and his suit is like a dark blue. It's supposed to be like bright blue and reminiscent
Dude,
of
his
hope.
Suit was awesome.
I agree. I thought it was, and it's the thing when they explain the whole, you know, this is not a costume. This is an outfit of royalty on my planet. I'm like, that's a much better explanation for the genesis of this character on Earth than. Well, my parents left me these weird pajamas, and I can fly, so look at me. Woo!
Right,
like,
yeah.
I get it that that's how Jerry Siegel and Joel Shuster created Superman in 1939, but when they created Superman, he started out wearing a black t-shirt with a red S on it and jeans, and couldn't fly, jumped over things, and he would fight robbers and wife beaters. And then over time, as they expanded it upon the mythos, then all of a sudden he had the costume and then he could fly and then he was picking up a bus over his head. And then if you read the book Men of Tomorrow by, I believe the author's name is Duncan Jones, or read Super Gods by Grant Morrison, and you'll see how Superman evolved and grew over the years and decades
as they needed more abilities.
Well, that was the thing. They said the reason the entire Krypton origin story came about was because Superman comics were dwindling sales-wise. It was after World War II. superheroes weren't as popular anymore. All these characters all of a sudden started seeing their sales go down. And it was coming towards the middle end of the 40s, and DC at the time, I believe they were called, I forget what the heck they were called. National Comics, maybe, at the time. They were like, we need something. And this, and Siegel and Schuster were like almost ready to get, they were almost on the verge of getting fired, because for a while, when Superman was doing really well, they were making a ton of money for kids their age. Then all of a sudden, they're not getting as many opportunities to write. The weekly newspaper strip's doing okay, but the comics aren't selling. So they basically said, we got to come up with something to make this character interesting again. So they created this whole backstory of how he's born on Krypton, and they shipped him over here. So all that stuff was shoehorned in over time. I forgot. I like went way off on a tangent. I forgot how I was even trying to get started. Oh, the whole like royalty, like everyone's like, oh, he's blue pajamas. Well, yeah, everything's been, he's been molded and, you know, reshaped more and more times, and it makes the character more interesting. And it wasn't like the Siegel and Schuster came up with this fully formed idea that was like, yes, it was. It took years and decades and new ideas to turn him into what he is now. So, you know, for everyone who thinks, like, this is the story, it's Krypton, he comes to Earth, he's Superman. Nah, not really. There's a, I mean, maybe back in 1941, but not anymore.
Yeah. All right, so, scale of 1 to 10, where are you at?
I'm going to...
That's not a number.
I'm going to go with my score from the website. I'm sticking with a 9.5. I love this movie. I don't think it has anywhere near the amount of flaws that people like to attribute to it. I think it is the signature Superman movie for this time in the world. I mean, 10 years from now, everything might be awesome. Jobs might be plentiful. War might be finally over with. We
never.
Might. I'm just saying.
It's too profitable.
I'm just saying, at some point, we may dig our way out of this horrific mess we've been subjected to for the last 15 years, and things will be, you know, on the up, and everyone will be happy, and the economy will be working for everybody and not for 12 people with, you know, rocket ships in their yard. And then that will be the time to make a more upbeat Superman movie. I don't know. Not really now.
No. I agree. I'm only at a 9.
And I just want to throw in also, I still feel like the character is positive and hopeful despite all the horrible things going on around
him. I agree.
So, take that.
I mean, just based on the performances alone, you know, it's 9 at least all day. Well, like I said, there's nothing majorly wrong with it. It's just there's a couple of annoyances here and there, and I wish I would have wrote some more down. But, you know, By no means is it a movie that after 2 hours and 20 minutes you're going to be like, Jesus, it's still going. Like, it's solid across the board. There's no doubt about that. So, a lot of people don't, you know, we've talked about Zack Snyder and people either love him or hate him. So based on what you've seen movie-wise from him, what other three comic stories, books, whatever, would you like to see him take a shot at? Number three for me, and I'm not going specific at all with any specific story, but I think it'd be neat to see him do something with Batman.
Yeah, well, he is doing something with Batman, though.
Well, nailed it. Is that a tie-in for the movie that's coming out in like a month?
Yeah, and to the haters who hate that movie already, which is hilarious on so many levels, I'm taking a day off. I'm planning to see it at least three times. I'm super pumped. This is my Force Awakens. Take that, nerds. Or not nerds, or whatever. Friends?
See, to me, that sounds...
Well-wishers?
Your whole...
That's aggressive.
When people argue about Marvel and DC, now you're arguing comics over Star Wars. Like, just relax.
No, I'm not...
Relax, nerd.
I'm not arguing comics. I'm just saying, like, people were jacked for Star Wars, and
nerd.
Justifiably so.
Nerd.
But this is my Force Awakens.
I'll give you a Force Awakens.
This is my Superman peanut butter and Batman cereal on screen for the first time together.
Wow.
When Batman cereal came out, I had to have it. And it was terrible. I'm sure it would be terrible if I tried it. It'd be worse if I try it now. Now it'd be like horrifying. Might as well eat out of the dirt. All right. Anyway, my number three, Jonathan Hickman's Manhattan Projects.
I haven't read them. I can't say.
It's pretty much all these famous scientists find a portal to a timeline where the evil versions of themselves exist, and these two timelines merge and chaos ensues. It's super weird. Typical Jonathan Hickman, humongous ideas stretched over this entirely weird story with there's an evil Robert Oppenheimer who is it's been a while since I read it. It's a really out there story. I think Zack Snyder could totally go nuts with that thing. It'd be great to see.
My number two is, my number two and number one are both currently running stories. My number two is Descender.
Ooh, yes.
And for those of you who are not familiar, basically it's about a small robot android boy who's being hunted by quite a few people, actually. He wakes up on a planet that was a mining colony. Everyone's dead. It's just him and his dog. And people start picking up the life beacon or whatever the hell, because he's activated, whatever. So now you got bounty hunters coming after him. You got scientists coming after him because it's a really interesting story.
His brother is coming after him.
Way to ruin the issue 6 spoiler.
You're only on issue 6?
I don't know. I was just guessing.
Wow.
I don't think I'm only on 6. I'm just saying that's when you find out that it's his brother.
I can't help but keep current with that story because it keeps being amazing.
I'm pretty much current as far as I know.
It's funny that you mentioned that because they just announced they hired writers to write the script for the film.
Now I'm scared because that's scary.
Could be scary. Could be amazing.
I feel like just stick with the guy who's writing the book and pay him to write the movie.
He might not be a screenwriter, though.
He can help.
I just hope it gets made because I would be super excited to see Descender on the big screen or the small screen or the medium screen. I don't really care.
Or any kind of miniseries. Yeah.
Any kind of screen would be all right. My number two, I think, could tap into Zack Snyder's probable manhandling of noir, combined with his dabbling in horror, if you've seen his Dawn of the Dead remake, which actually was better than I expected. Not great. Not close to as good as the original, but I thought it was going to be junk, and it was actually, it was watchable. Fatale. Ed Brubaker's Fatale. You get all the weird 70s satanic sex cult mixed with some Cthulhu mythos and the woman you just can't take your eyes off of. There's something about her, and I think I'm going to let her slit my throat later. Woo! Bam, bam, bam!
She's got the kind of legs you'd like to suck on for a day.
Pretty much.
Nice. My number one, also current DC running book, Bombshells. It brings you back to the whole World War II era, and basically it's all the female superheroes back then, but they're not really superheroes at the time. They're coming together to fight the Nazis.
That trade comes out next month. I'm super pumped to read it.
I've been doing the singles, and it is by far one of my top three favorites that I'm currently reading.
I just hope they keep doing books like that once they do their rebirth initiative this summer, because I'm really not looking forward to that. I know a lot of old DC fans are, but I like the stuff they're doing now because it's not so glued to continuity, but whatever. My number one, it'll never happen. Well, at least half of it will never happen because it's currently on television being butchered by Fox. Yeah, Lucifer. Some girl from HitFix.com wrote an amazing essay about how a book like Lucifer really only gets one shot at any sort of screen, and the way Fox is just destroying it right now means that we'll never see it again. And the people who like the show will likely never really get to experience what made the comic series so great. And the people who love the comic will never get to experience the show they always hoped it would turn into. I completely agreed with her, so much so that I tweeted her to tell her about it. So I think Zack Snyder, given his proclivities with comics in the past and present, would do Lucifer justice. But while it's still out there and Joseph Gordon-Levitt is in the middle of trying to get that together, and now speculation is because Deadpool did so well, Sandman is now got a clearer path towards some sort of screen because it should be R-rated. And I think the visuals from the comic would be interesting to see done by Zack Snyder, so long as he gets somebody to write the script for him.
Oh, I thought you were going to say get someone to play Sandman. I mean, I'm available. I can clear my schedule.
I actually think Joseph Gordon-Levitt would be fine as Dream of the
really
Endless.
Good actor. Yeah, I mean,
I just hope that gets made because I love Sandman and I really want to see some version of it somewhere eventually. Yeah. That and Lock and Key are two books that I really cannot wait to see adapted some way, somehow, see, somewhere.
Adapting Lock and Key just scares me.
Depends on who does it.
I don't know.
If you give it to Michael Bay, yeah, it's going to be horrible.
Oh, God. You just ruined my night. Whatever. With all that being said, we're going to wrap this up.
Did you pick your number one?
Yeah, Bombshells.
Oh, that's right.
And as always, you can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury. You can find the show at The Comic Roast. Or you can find the review site at Review and Roast. And don't forget, we also have the Review and Roast website at reviewandroast.com. We have an Instagram and a Twitter, also both at Review and Roast. So, yeah. Let's connect. Let's do some stuff. If you want us to do a particular movie, by all means, let us know and we'll do our best to make it happen. If you're listening, Jeff, we didn't forget about Amadeus. We'll get to it. Sorry. Until next week, have a good one.